Welcome to the Kingdom Life Church podcast. We hope you enjoy this message by Pastor Jamie Dixon. For more great content, visit klcmaine.com.
All right, open up to James chapter 1. I am starting a series in the book of James today. And, week after week, it's never just topical, and sometimes I pick a passage and just teach through it. For the next few weeks, we are actually going to go line by line and teach the book of James. So my encouragement to you is that as a house, would you study this with me over the next few weeks? Would you spend time in the Word, take notes, can we bring paper Bibles to church again? I want to start a bring a real Bible to church movement. Might even do like sword check and everyone like raises their Bibles and we need to bring it back. Everyone's going vintage and everything. Let's go vintage Christianity and bring Bibles to church again. Let's be honest. You know, what's that? Oh, I do New King James Version. Always New King James Version with study notes out of the Amplified or the Passion. My encouragement to us, the devil shows up in push notifications, right? You're on their app going through, reading the Bible, and then Instagram goes, Derek Sylvester liked your post. And you look across in church, listen. Bring your paper Bibles to church, friends. Bring your journals, and we're going to go line by line, and we're going to study words and everything. So you guys ready to get into it? I'm going to make a confession really quick. Teaching the book of James is a bit of a personal goal of mine, because the book of James has for years been my least favorite book in the entire Bible. Yeah. Least favorite book in the entire book of the Bible. And I'm going to use the words of Luther to express why. Okay, you guys ready for a little Martin Luther quotes? You ready for this? Martin Luther, I have three quotes from Martin Luther said, therefore, St. James' epistle is really the epistle of straw compared to the others, for it has nothing of the nature of the gospel about it. He's being kind. He gets worse. Ready? He then says, the epistle of James gives us very much trouble, for the papists embrace it alone and leave out all the rest. Accordingly, if they will not admit my interpretations, then I shall make rubble of it. I almost feel like throwing Jimmy into the stove as the priest in Kallenberg did. Martin Luther said he's going to throw Jimmy into the stove. He then said, we should throw the entire epistle of James out of the school of Wittenberg, for it doesn't amount to much. It contains not a syllable about Christ. Not once does it mention Christ except at the beginning. I maintain that some Jewish guy wrote it who probably heard about Christian people but never encountered any. And since he heard that Christians place such a great weight on faith in Christ, he thought, wait a moment, I'll oppose them and urge works alone. And that he did. Is this encouraging you about our Bible study into the book of James? One of the reasons why it's been my least favorite book of the New Testament has actually been for the same exact reasons, is its lack of Christology in the book. Its lack of theology and so much about human behavior and Christian behavior has always led me to just not enjoy it very much. But as I've been reading it, my goal is this. This is why it's a personal goal of mine to teach this. Is because I want to convince Martin Luther himself that the book of James is a gift to the church. And I'm gonna convince us all. How many of you guys love the book of James? Any book of James lovers? Any book of James, like, not so much lovers? Is there anybody that, okay, one person said, but he's so confrontational in the first service. My goal is to teach the book of James as a gift to the church, because what I believe in, what I'm going to start to try to help interpret the book of James for us, is that if we dispel the plea for works for a second and recognize that James is not a plea for Christian works, but it's outlining a lifestyle that draws the full fruit of the cross into your life. David said, the boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. And listen, when I look upon this church, I don't think this is a church of puddle jumper Christians. How many of you guys want to walk with Jesus and grow in Jesus the rest of your life? Come on. That you want to be an ever-increasing believer, allowing your life to become transformed. And what James is displaying and what James is offering is not the mandates to be saved. He's actually laying out a lifestyle that causes the full fruit of what Jesus purchased to be made like real in your life. Guys, if you want it all, if you want to experience the full weight of the cross, if you want to experience eternity now, if you want to bring the kingdom of heaven now, then live this way, and this is what you'll see. And so what I want to present to you is James is not a book of rules, but James is a book of keys and wisdom that unlock the potential of Christ in your life. Is that all right? So every week I'm going to take a portion, and I'm going to teach it as a key. And this week's key, which is going to be verses 1 through 20, and we're going to race. So, like, buckle up, okay? What I'm going to teach over the next 20 verses is that I'm going to teach that the key to forever faithfulness. How do we walk with God for the rest of our lives? You ready? Let's read it. Verse 2, after the introduction, he says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all liberally without reproach, and it will be given to them. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord, for he is a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. That's probably one of the moments that Luther threw the Bible across the room. Listen, we're going to start with verse 1. You guys ready? Or verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, comma, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. How many of you guys have had this verse haunt you? Okay, how many of you guys have grown to hate this verse? Because you're going through stuff and someone's like, count it all joy, brother. Anybody? You're like, no. I've heard this thing slinged around like low-hanging fruit. Like, well, we're supposed to enjoy trials. How many of you guys want to know the secret of finding joy in the midst of a trial? Because he begins to lay this out, right? And I know that this verse has like been beaten over the heads of people as if like you go through trials, you're like, why aren't you laughing through it? Why aren't you saying this is so good? I love trials, it's fun, right? This is how this verse has always been interpreted. This is great. I'm supposed to love it. I find joy in all the trials of life. That is not what he's saying. In the book of James here, he's not saying, hey, find joy in the trial. But the key word in discovering joy in trials is the word knowing. Everyone say knowing. He says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Knowing, underline it, circle it, arrows, stars in your paper Bibles that you can write in. It's knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. The key word for joy in the midst of trials is knowing, because your ability to experience joy in difficulty and trying times is based on what you know. It's based on understanding. The word joy means to be favorably positioned, the awareness of grace, grace recognized, joy because of grace. It doesn't mean laughy, humor, I'm so happy. It means I've recognized that I'm highly favored of the Lord in the midst of this whole thing. It means that I am fully assured that I'm his favorite and that what's going on around me is not a fruit of him being me being in a place of lack of favor with him. It means that all this going on is not because he's angry or frustrated, but that I fully understand that I am his and he is mine, that he's a father and I stand favorably before him, and I have joy in the Lord, not in the trial, but I have joy in the Lord that does not change with seasons and certain situations. Wow, I tried really hard to get that word out. It doesn't mean to not be happy. It's not happy that I'm suffering. It's not saying, this is awesome. It's not finding joy in the trial. It's finding a joy in the midst of all trials. That when you go through various trials, he's saying, find God. Are your eyes on him? Find joy in what he's doing in your life. Discover the purpose and the plan of God in your life. Search for understanding. Remain curious in the working of God in your life. He's actually not just saying like seasons and moments. He's saying, are you a curious believer? Always asking God, what are you doing? Always yielding to the voice of the Lord. Always seeking and finding God. Someone's freaking out. All these things are happening. It's wild and crazy. Are you the curious believer going, I wonder what God is doing? I wonder what God is saying. God, show us. Since I'm so highly favored, since I'm his favorite, I wonder what he's rewarding me with in this season. I wonder what he's adding to my life. I wonder what's growing inside of me. I wonder what he's giving to me. Like, I wonder how I'm going to come out of the situation. Like, oh, I'm losing my job. I wonder what better job he has for me. I wonder how he's shaking my life so violently to put me in a better position. Because God is so good, I wonder what he's producing. Because I know I'm his favorite. I know that I'm highly favored. And so I have joy in knowing that before the Lord. I wonder what God's producing in my life. Oh, my marriage, it's such a mess. I wonder what God has for my wife. I wonder if there's a love and a romance and intimacy and a connection that we've never known before. And we're going to discover it in this season. And I wonder what that revelation is. Man, I wonder what God is doing. The joy is not the trial. The joy is the favor of God over my life that doesn't change in trials. You guys all right? Sometimes we're so aware of other people's problems, we stop recognizing the work that's being done inside of me. I'm just a product of my environment, and all the people around me stink. They're so bad at life. They're so bad at being friends. They're so bad at this. They're so bad at that. Like, we're so aware of everybody else that we have no idea what's going on inside of me. Sometimes I can give you a 3,000-word essay on what the enemy is doing in my life, but I couldn't tell you for a second what the Lord is doing in my life. Well, I went to a conference. It was really incredible. Then this Leviathan spirit that's on the land attacked my life. And I realized that there's a third generation Mason blood covenant that was made years ago, and it's just now showing up in my life. And all of these things that happened this week are a product of the Masonic ties to that generation, and I'm living in this constant warfare, and I need to blow a shofar, pour out oil, and put a stake in the ground, and we'll get breakthrough. None of you think that way. I know. There's people that really think that way. Some of you guys think that way. Stop it. We're so aware of what the enemy is doing. But if you go, well, that's incredible. You're so aware of what the enemy is doing. What's God doing? Couldn't for a second tell you what God is doing. We're so aware. We like map out the plan of the enemy for our life, but we couldn't tell you for a second what God is doing in the midst of it all. Sometimes I could tell you everything the enemy has done to destroy our destiny, but I couldn't even tell you what my destiny is. We're so aware of the resistance, we didn't even know what we're being resisted from. When you submit to understanding, you experience joy. You guys all right? But the joy is not in the breakthrough. The joy is in the process of interacting with God in all seasons. This is what he says. Listen. He says, knowing that the enduring of your faith produces patience. patience. He goes, find joy. He doesn't say find joy knowing that God's going to bring a breakthrough. You just got to get through this, buddy. He's going to bring a breakthrough. He says this, find joy in it because God's producing patience in you. It's all for patience. What does that mean? That means that God's not in it for you to get a new car because your like engine exploded because you forgot to do an oil change for 6 months. Like, and I need a breakthrough. I need a breakthrough. There's so much resistance, God. Leviathan spirits attacking my life because I got blasted by God at that conference. Get breakthrough for me. God's not in it for the breakthrough. He's in it for the rest of your life. He wants to walk with you and have all of your heart for the rest of your life. He's not just in it for a moment. He's saying, hey, go through this process and discover who I am in all seasons. Because if you do that, it's going to produce a lifelong longevity of pursuing me and knowing me. He wants you for the rest of your life. He says, but then he says this, understanding will produce patience. You know, I think one of the craziest, you know, most of our sin is responded into taking things into our own hands. Our biggest messes of our life is when we try to do stuff in our own strength. And then he says this. He says, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may become perfect. Everyone say perfect. It's a lofty goal. And complete. Everyone say complete. Lacking nothing. Everyone say lacking nothing. So you're actually three separate things. He says this. He goes, if you seek understanding of what God is doing and the favorable work that God's producing in your life in all seasons, and if you submit your life to the work of the Lord and you patiently yield to the process of the course of your life, he says this, the joy of knowing God is a lifelong journey of delight and it's producing perfection and completion to the point of you wanting nothing. That word of perfection literally means to become mature from going through the necessary stages until you reach the end goal. Don't you guys want to extract everything God is doing in every season of your life? To become mature from going through all the necessary stages until you reach the end goal. And it literally means like this, like an old pirate telescope, right? Where it's like, if you have it all like together, you only see like near, but you go one click and you see further, and another click and you see further, and another click and you see further. And he goes, the longer every like trial and season you go through is like God is maturing you in that place so you can see further what he sees. So you get more of an eternal perspective. How many of you guys want to be stretched and extracted until you get God's line of view? That's what he's producing in all seasons inside of you. Then he says this, incomplete, made whole in every part by the inner working of the divine. That completion, I daydream about becoming whole. Does anybody ever think about wholeness? Like, wouldn't it be awesome if I just didn't get angry at some stuff? Like, wouldn't it be amazing if I just wasn't triggered all the time by other people? If I didn't have anxiety not knowing the future and feel this like constant need to control the outcome of my life, like, wouldn't that be awesome? Like, every day I'm the exact same person and my zeal for the Lord is never distracted by the circumstances. Do you guys ever daydream about like, this is, I don't daydream like, what an impossible thing. I daydream and like, this is what God is producing inside of me. And every day he's growing me. And every day and every season is an opportunity for him to bring healing and wholeness on the inside of me that I'm becoming a mature man. That later in my life, in my 50s, in my 60s, in my 70s, will become the most fruitful years of my life because I forever yielded to the voice of the Lord in my life. And forever of my life, I allowed trials to actually bring perfection, wholeness, and completion to the work of the Lord in my life. And now I see what he sees and I know his heart. And then he goes, in wanting nothing, which literally means I've come to the end of my earthly passions. I'm no longer driven by my self-wants, self-pleasures, and self-needs, which means like I'm no longer distracted by my need to be wanted by everybody around me. I'm no longer distracted by feeling like I'm missing out on the experiences of the world and wanting what the world has. And I'm no longer driven by my earthly passions. And I'm no longer driven by my need to see the world and my need for friends and my need for to be wanted and liked and all these things. All of those earthly passions, which are fine, they're not sinful, but their distractions are gone. My appetite for the needs of the flesh are gone. I've become so mature and so whole that those things mean nothing to me anymore. All I want is Him. So much of our anxiety is created by the carnal passions inside of us, feeling like they're not being met. But wholeness looks like, man, my appetite's been met. I want God. He's all I want. This is what the patient process and work of the Lord is doing inside of me. And your ability to find joy is in your understanding and yieldedness to what God is doing in all seasons. Stay curious. Stay attentive to the voice of the Lord. What is He saying? What is He doing? And what is He producing? Not in the person next to you, in you. He goes on and he says this. He goes, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God who gives it to all liberally and without reproach, it will be given to him. Let's not confuse this. The wisdom is not a new concept that what he's already presenting. It's the knowing. It's the understanding. You know, I think it's very simple. If you don't know what God is doing, ask him. Church, if you don't know what God is doing, what do? Ask God. And oh, he'll talk. He'll give it to you liberally, more than you ask for. I think this is important because wisdom is not some super smart answer to our problems. Wisdom is right understanding of what God is doing. Wisdom doesn't come out of your past experience. It doesn't just come out of your history. Wisdom is produced by aligning your life to what God is saying and doing in your life. Even when godly wisdom leads you to trouble, I need you to understand that even the godly wisdom that leads you into trouble is still wisdom. Because wisdom is not caution. Wisdom is obedience to the voice of the Lord. Wisdom is not driving 45 in the 55 just to be cautious for no reason. It's not to live your life out of fear. Fear will masquerade itself as wisdom, but fear is not wisdom. Fear is intimidation. It's the fear of man. It's the fear of the future. It's not trusting the work of the Lord in your life. Fear is saying yes to the Lord, even when it leads me to places that feel like risk. What'd I say? Oh, wisdom. Fear is not, yeah, let me re-say that. Wisdom is saying yes to the Lord and being obedient to the work of the Lord in your life, even when it leads you down a road of risk. Are you hearing me? And then he says this, you know, if anyone asks for wisdom, let's define wisdom. It's yieldedness to what God is doing. And then he says, let him ask, which is an invitation to interact with God in all seasons. If you don't know what God is doing, ask him. My goodness. How many of our untrained carnal minds never interact with the Lord in the midst of difficulty? We don't train our mind to interact with God. What are you doing, God? What are you saying? What's going on? I want to solve the problem in my own strength. Don't solve the problem in your own strength. Interpret what God is doing in the midst of the problem and yield to the work of the Holy Spirit. You all right? You guys are quieter than the nine. Unusual experience. You guys are excited for whatever the fire department's bringing. He goes on, he goes, ask for wisdom, but with no doubting. For he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. For he's a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. And what he's saying is he's saying, don't try to live in two worlds of wisdom. Don't go in and out of the wisdom of the Lord. Allow the wisdom of God to rule over your life in all seasons and all things. Don't go in the comfortable seasons, go, I'm living in the wisdom of God. And then things get crazy and you go, God, be quiet. I need to fix this. And he goes, you're like a man who's in the waves being tossed back and forth, and you step out of your spirit and you do it in your own strength and you create a bunch of problems to the point where you come to the end of yourself and you go back in the spirit and he goes, let's fix all the problems of the past season if you're doing it on your own strength. You sowed a bunch of weeds in the garden, let's go pluck them all out. And he goes, you're like a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways, because we don't know what we're going to get out of you. One day you're doing incredible, and we're like, you're so wise. And the next day, stuff hits your household, and you're acting crazy. And everyone around you, like, what happened to the wise, you know, person that I keep yielding to, and now they're angry at everybody and giving really bad advice? You're like a double-minded man, unstable in all your ways. I can't trust you because I don't know what I'm going to get out of you every single day. Yield your whole life to the Lord. What he's saying is, if you want the work of the Holy Spirit to perform something inside of you that's deep and it's maturing you and growing you and bearing fruit through your life, submit yourself to the work of the Holy Spirit and inquire of the Lord in all seasons, what are you doing so that I can align to it? Find joy in the trial because you know what God's doing and you know that you're highly favored and the trial is not going to steal anything that God's created. You're highly favored. He's producing something. There's a reward and a gift that God's producing in this season. Huzzah. What joy. I said huzzah. Are you guys all right? He gives an example. He goes on and he gives an example. He's still in the same conversation. This is not a new conversation. And he goes on. And he says, let the lowly brother glory in his exaltation and let the rich in his humiliation, because as a flower of the field, he's going to pass away. And what he's saying is this, is he's saying, hey, if you're poor, insecure, and broken, a lowly person who's meek and shy, but it's not godly meek and shy. It's actually like a demonic narrative of insecurity has been sown into your life and you believe that you're nothing. If you're that lowly, he goes, glory in your exaltation. Why? Because God brought you out of it? No. Because in your exaltation, that narrative of insecurity is being confronted and you're not allowed to agree with it anymore. He's saying, like, insecurity is a lie from hell. So glory in the exaltation, because God's confronting the lie inside of your life. And I know this seems really hard, and I know that you've just been a good servant, and your good serving for all these years has been great, and then all of a sudden you get promoted to a manager's position, and you're terrified, anxiety, depression, all these days of your life. You thought that the thing that was good is actually like negatively affecting your life, and God's saying, hey, glory in that, because I'm confronting something inside of you. You're not allowed to be this lowly, broken person that has no voice. You're more than you ever thought that you were, and your exaltation's revealing it. Do you see what God is doing? Come on. Do you see what God is doing? Then he goes to the rich man. Wait, when you go low, glory in it. Why? Because in your wealth, you leaned on your own strength. You took your eyes off the Lord, and you allowed pride to enter in, and you become drawn distant from the Lord because life was comfortable and safe. And he's saying, and so when everything is lost, I need you to see God in it. I need you to see the return, the invitation to your eyes back to the Lord, that I am your strength. Can you see what God is doing in it? Glory in that moment. Let the rich glory in becoming low, and let the low glory in becoming big. And then he finally does this. He goes, but hold on. Hold on. And he draws a boundary line. And he says, blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he's been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I've been tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. So this is what he's saying. Hold on. God didn't take your money, rich man. Okay? God's not the author of your suffering. He draws a boundary line. He's saying, guys, hold on a second. Don't run with this idea that just because you're finding God in the midst of trial that you think God authored the trial. And you went through some stuff and maybe you got a bad diagnosis or a cancer diagnosis. You go, well, God gave this to me to teach me how to be humble or teach me how to trust him. God didn't give you what he doesn't have. Don't say God tempted me. God didn't tempt you to become depressed. God didn't tempt you to like break relationships in your life. God didn't tempt you to become accusatory of people around you. God didn't tempt you to become offended. God didn't tempt you to look at pornography. God didn't tempt you to all these different things. God is not giving you what he does not have, and he does not author stories that he has not written. draw some boundary lines. You're finding God even in the midst of trials, but God didn't author the suffering of your life. He doesn't have it. Right? But what does he say? But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. And he goes, temptation is not external, it's internal. Let's use the example of fight, flight, or freeze. When the rubber meets the road, how many fighters I got? Okay, get some fighters. How many freezers? Okay, a couple freezers. I don't know what to do. How many runners? Come on. I'm out burning rubber. I'm out of here, right? We try to avoid. We try to get away. How far can we run? How many of you guys know that every single one of us could go through the exact same trial and we could all respond incredibly different to it? Some of you could be tempted to wage war on the person in front of you and say, you're not a hot shot. I'm going to tear you down. Some of you could become frozen and immobile and you stop producing anything in your life. And some of you could just start setting fire to bridges, even the ones you don't even know you need to set fire to. You're just setting fire to bridges and getting out of Dodge, all of which are sinful. But he says this. He goes, but the temptation, how many of you guys know temptation is not just this external thing, it's a peripheral thing to trials, because when we go through difficulty, we become tempted. Am I going to do this because of how I'm feeling? How am I going to protect myself? How am I going to do this? And he goes, instead of doing what you always do, God didn't author the moment, but something is being revealed inside of you. If you want to set fire to the world around you, would you just lean in right now and say, God, are you confronting something in me? If you just want to start knocking people out, Father, is this your heart? Is this your ways? Do you just want to set fire to the world around me? Or is that my temptation because there's something inside of me that wants to be right? God, what are you doing? Would you please remain curious of what God is doing, because you'll find joy in knowing that God's producing something inside of you, that he's actually bringing you to wholeness. And what he's saying is this, is he's saying, like, listen, you are not just somebody that burns bridges. You're actually somebody that can bring healing. You actually have the power to restore relationships in your life. And there's actually opportunity for this relationship to bear more fruit than it once did. Like, you have the opportunity to stay where it's hard and where it's been difficult and you have felt resistance. Stay in the midst of it and work it out. Like, you're actually a powerful person. You are not just some weak person that's being like a victim to your environment. You're the most powerful person in the room because of the spirit that lives inside of you. And you can bring breakthrough, not only for yourself, but everybody around you. That you could actually be a profound voice of the kingdom in the Father's heart. Are you going to stay in it and fight for it? Are you going to run? Are you going to fight? Are you going to freeze? What are you going to do? Are you going to self-medicate? Are you going to look at pornography? Are you going to take up substances again because you don't know how to do all of this that's going on? What are you going to do? And the question is, are you going to do it in your own strength and find yourself in sin? Or are you going to lean into the Lord and say, God, what are you doing? Because when you understand what he's doing, there's going to be joy. And when joy comes, you'll stand in the midst of it. You'll feel a strength and a grace to actually attach yourself and yield to the process and know that this isn't just for a moment. This is for the rest of my life. You're doing a work inside of me. And I'm not going around this bend again. And I'm not burning the bridge again. And I'm not laying waste again to the dead bodies that are behind me. And I'm not going back to the vomit that I keep going back to. You're authoring something in me in the midst of the trials that I'm experiencing. And God, I'm yielding into you, not yielding into the wisdom of the world or what I've done in the past. This is the key to living with God for the rest of your life. Stay curious and listen to the Lord. What's he producing inside of you? The joy is not the trial. The joy is that I'm highly favored and there's a reward in this season. There's never a season that God's taking. He's always giving as he gave his son. He's always giving something. I had a friend the other day call me up and he says, Jamie, I've been running with this like camp and these leaders for years of my life. And he said, and I have all the, this favor I had. And he said, something just happened where I came to them with a dream in my heart. And they came in and they literally tried to like squash me and shut me down. I mean, this is an incredible leader. It was such an injustice against his life. And they came in, they tried to take it away and they accused me and they shut me down. And he said, but what's wild is that like I turned to the Lord and say, God, I was not given this dream by man. I was given it to you by alone. He goes, I stayed faithful to what the Lord called me to. And he goes, Jamie, I literally had like my registration for this like thing I was doing went from 300 to 600 in one day. And he goes, all of a sudden, he goes, I went to a meeting and I've never seen the anointing break out like it's breaking out right now. And I said to him, I said, that's because instead of leaning into the crisis, you leaned into the voice of the Lord over your life, and out of the shaking came promotion. Why? Because you could say, oh man, I'm losing something. You're not losing something. What is the gift God is giving to you in this season? What is he doing inside of you? Are you who you are because man says it about you or because God says it about you? And God, he's breaking the codependence of that relationship with man off of your life, and he's bringing you into the firmness of knowing that I am the Lord's and he is mine. Are you with me? This is the key to living faithfully with the Lord for the rest of your life. Lean into his voice in all seasons. Be trained and equipped by the voice and the wisdom of God. Lean into him and yield to the process, because this is not for today. This is for the rest of your life. What is God doing? Stand with me.